And a very good morning to you. This is the Business Breakfast. Malcolm Taylor and Richard Dean. It's 9:22. Very happy to have Sanoush Sharif in the studio from our Asian News Desk. And good morning to you, Sanoush.
Good morning.
Let's start first. Damien has texted in with a story about Sri Lanka. He says, today's important news in the subcontinent is that the Chinese President Xi Jinping is visiting Colombo in Sri Lanka for massive investment and partnership in the development of shipping and trade there as well. We've talked before about Xi Jinping's forthcoming visit to India, but he's obviously stopping off in Sri Lanka on the way up. He's got a lot of money to spend, hasn't he? So it should benefit Sri Lanka as well as India.
Yes, in fact, Sri Lanka is the first key stop on Xi Jinping's wider visit to the South Asian region. And trade and commercial ties have been traditionally strong between Colombo and Beijing. There are numerous Chinese-funded infrastructure projects currently taking shape in Sri Lanka, and more big announcements are expected during this two-day trip. And after that, he heads to India. Initially, Pakistan was also on his list, but due to the political situation over there, he's decided to postpone his Pakistan leg of the visit.
Certainly, they've got a lot of improving infrastructure in Sri Lanka. They've got the new road down to Galle, the new highway. Mm-hmm. They've got a new port, and doing pretty well.
And indeed, the Colombo port city, $1.4 billion, financed by Chinese investors, a significant role to play there. But let's talk about another story that you're covering today, which is India. And the government there is considering closing some of the loss-making state firms. Seems like an obvious move, but a big deal in India.
Yes, and officials are meeting today to discuss how they can implement this plan to shut down some of the loss-making state-owned companies. And there are currently around 260 firms owned by the central government, dozens more at the state level, and these companies are involved in activities ranging from, you know, generating nuclear power to making detergents. Some of them are successful, but many are there that have been bleeding cash for decades, and they've only been kept open with the help of budgetary support each year. So now the government is considering what they can do with 10 firms that they've identified that make the biggest losses, and apparently these 10 firms had a combined net loss of $4 billion in 2012-2013.
Ouch, that's got to hurt, and that comes out of the public purse, doesn't it? That's money that should be going on schools and hospitals.
And this is what the government is looking to do, because in the past, when there has been similar proposals, it's been met with stiff resistance, so now it's looking at what sort of concrete action can be implemented.
How many people are likely to lose their jobs if these companies close?
Well, the exact numbers are not known, but again, the move has been blocked by the powerful trade union, irrespective of their political affiliation. For example, the ruling BJP's very own trade union has said that it will block this move with the support of other trade unions. And if you look at the list of companies, it apparently includes the like of Air India, telecom service providers, BSNL, MTNL, Hindustan Fertilizers Corporation, and six other companies. Overall, there are 10 firms that have been identified. Chances are not all of them would be closed. There'll be other alternative options in place, but there are two companies in particular, for example, Hindustan Photo Films, which is engaged in making film roles, that has been identified as one company which could be shut down. Then there's another one called HMT, its watchmaking division, which could also be shut down. So these are some of the companies that have been identified.
Well, I suppose any country around the world, you would expect your government to look after people, try and feed them as much as it could. But particularly in a country where you've got like 1.2, 1.3 billion people to feed, you would expect this sort of government to take up some slack and keep employees, the companies going, if you like, almost for social reasons.
Yes, because it's not going to be an easy move. For example, with some of these companies in the mid-1990s, there was a recovery plan that was suggested. Then there was also another closure plan that was suggested, but these companies went to court. They won a temporary stay order, and then these legal proceedings tend to move on for years. And chances are, if there's a change in the government, their policies also tend to change, and then the administration just sits on it. But now, the new government says that getting rid of these loss-making companies is on their priority list. Privatization is also on their priority list. So chances are things could change. They'll have to take some flak, but they say eventually for things to turn around, these hard measures are required.
Very quickly, Malcolm, there clearly is a template for Indian companies to be very efficient. It reminds me of a story you mentioned about an hour or two ago, which was the list of the most sustainable, I think was the word, companies in Asia. And this was sustainable not just from an environmental perspective, but also in terms of, is their business model sustainable? And a lot of Indian companies were on that list, weren't they? Which shows you just how strong they are.
Yeah, exactly. We've got Indian companies at first. We've got Tata Consultancies, the most sustainable in the latest Channel News Asia sustainability ranking for Asia's top businesses. So you've got Tata Consultancy at number one. You've got Wipro at number six. Infosys at number eight. HCL Technologies at number 9, so 4 in the top 10, which is pretty good going.
Let's talk about Nepal very briefly, Sanuj. The government plans to set up a welfare bank for migrant workers.
Yes, the plan is to have this in place by the end of next month to provide easy financing options to migrant workers and their dependent families. Nepal's Ministry of Labour and Employment has been conducting feasibility studies on this now. It's mainly ensured at giving these workers low-interest loans and other financial services. You know, there's a huge flow of expat remittances, apparently to the tune of around $5 billion annually, but the government has not initiated any concrete plans or financial institutions catering to migrant workers. And it said that the inflow of remittances alone account for 25% of the country's GDP. And now the government is actively looking at having a dedicated bank for these expat workers.
So is it going to be a 100% government entity? What sort of guarantees are these workers going to have to provide in return for loans?
It's expected to be a public-private partnership with the government holding a 50% stake, and the rest will be held by other agencies, including the Migrant Workers Welfare Fund. Now, when it comes to collaterals that these workers will have to provide in return, that's not yet clear. There are concerns about that, and there are requests for the government to make arrangements to provide loans on the basis of the workers' work contracts and other legal documents, rather than ensuring that they have properties or assets to show.
Sanuj Sharif from the Asian News Desk here at the Air In News Centre, always getting your thoughts. Thank you indeed for joining us this morning.
Thank you.